Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! All right, another week begins, and I'm awfully glad that I'm beginning it with you. Minute and a half past the hour, and I guess there's a natural place where we start this discussion this evening. It is, to say the least, well, look, it's not one of those prophecy moments or anything, but many months back, perhaps even over a year back, I said to you that this election season would be the nastiest we have ever seen, and that every time something came up, I said to you, but it's going to get uglier. It's going to get uglier. It's going to get nastier. It's going to get more vile. And I would have been glad to have been wrong. Sadly, I was not. And it is, the combination of the screams of communist and socialist coming from the howling throat of Sarah Palin, those cryptic, sidelong glance accompanied mutterings of, "My friends, who is Barack Obama really?" The dribbling out of the mouth of Lumpy McHoover. Coupled with the screaming about Acorn. And then finally, yesterday, what appears to be deemed among the for-profit media the coup de grace in it all, the endorsement of Colin Powell. We'll get to that in a minute. Frankly, I don't know why Colin Powell is such a big deal. This is a guy who was willing to go, and knowing he was doing so, was willing to lie his ass off to the world to get us started in a war and an occupation that continues to bleed this nation both physically and fiscally. But the combination of all those things have led to something bloody and frothy and hate-filled that is sickening beyond compare. Now, you know how I feel about journalism. You know that I believe it should be the journalist's right to report words as they are spoken so that people can feel the full force of them. You know that I think there's a big difference journalistically between reporting someone else's use of vulgarity and using it oneself. So it's one of those little Tommy, little Susie, mommy, daddy, run them out of the room kind of moments if you don't want to have to explain why right-wingers talk the way they do. So there's your warning. This is internet-based. We are not constrained by the censorship of the Federal Communications Commission. So here, and on no terrestrial media, can you hear these words. These are real, live right-wingers placing hate calls to Acorn. These ignorant fools have been whipped into a frenzy about Acorn, even though they don't even know what Acorn does. even though the Acorn controversy is an entirely ginned up, dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up bunch of hooey created by the Repig-licking party. It's what they do, that and robocalls. The audio was posted by John Amato over at Crooks and Liars. And it is disturbing. I do not play it for shock value. I play it solely for the purpose of letting you hear the actual words of actual wingnuts and the actual hate upon which everything they do is grounded. Here's the first one. Female. Got one of those little church lady voices. Wait till you hear what flies out of her little church lady mouth. Here we go.
Hi, I was just calling to let you all know that Barack Obama needs to get hung. He's a fucking nigger and he's a piece of shit. You guys are fraudulent and yet you need to go to hell. Because all the niggers on oak trees. They're going to get all hung, honeys. They're going to get assassinated. They're going to get killed.
End of message.
Yeah, no kidding. Honeys. I'll be candid with you. I have had to play that several times just to be able to play it now without engaging in screaming, because I don't like to scream into the microphone. And I had a real soul-searching moment as to whether or not I would play it at all. Maybe I'd just read about it. But you see, I remember early on starting down this path, I would report something, and I would say, and so-and-so said, quote, and the little wingnut freaks would then call up and they'd say, well, that obviously didn't say it. If they said it, you'd be playing the tape. You're just making it up. No, by God, it's there. And there is a chain of custody of that recording that extends from Acorn all the way to John Amato via Right Wing Watch. This, I wish I could, see, this is the part of the program where, ha ha, see, I was just kidding, that ain't real. Sunshine, it's real. It is as real as the hate-filled, bigoted, prejudiced monsters that utter the words. And to those who would say, well, you know, Bob, that's atypical, they're not all like that. Yeah, they are! The hardcore fundamentalists? Yeah, they are. And those words pour out of their mouths like a torrent of bile and filth anytime they think that there's no one listening. Need to get hung from trees. Oak trees. See, she thought that was cute to say oak trees because it was acorn. It's not the only one, though. There's this one.
You liberal idiots. Dumb shits. Welfare bums. You guys just fucking come to our country, consume every natural resource there is, and make a lot of babies. That's all you guys do. And then suck up the welfare. And expect everyone else to pay for your hospital bills for your kids. I say just let your kids die. That's the best move. Just let your children die. Forget about paying for hospital bills for them. I'm not going to do it. You guys are little lives, and I hope you all die.
It's breathtaking, isn't it? It is absolutely breathtaking. The fact that a semi-corporate, entirely moderate, nothing liberal about him whatsoever, man of half African descent, never mind the fact that every human on the planet is of 100% African descent, but we won't get into that right now, might occupy the White House, has brought out the hate in this country by the bushel basketful. It's enough to make you weep. It really, really is. Weep for your country. Weep for humanity. Weep for our future. A few weeks ago when we put the Obama sign in our yard, and I reported to you the immediate after effects of that, I myself was reminded how vile this is going to be. And I thought, well, I've experienced it firsthand. And that was true. But it's going to continue. The thing, the part where I was wrong, and I hope you'll bear with me for just a moment, please. If you're on hold, please stay that way. I'll come to you in just a sec. I want to tell you, however, that I was wrong about some of this. And the area in which I was wrong has to do with the fact that this doesn't end on November 4th. Gird up your loins, as the book says. Or as my old football coach used to say, pull your jock straps up around your shoulder blades. It's going to get rough. Because it is. This doesn't end on November 4th. This is a wellspring of racial bigotry and hatred that John McCain has cracked open, and it is going to gush like an artesian spring viewing nothing but snakebite venom. And it's going to pour all over this country for as long as these people see someone of the wrong color in the wrong office. This is where we are. This is America, 2008, turning and facing backwards, or some portions of America wanting to march back into the dim, dark days of the 19th, the 18th, the 17th, the 16th centuries. And you'd best be ready for it. And I put a question to you. How will you address it? If you hear this personally, if something like this is said around you, being a good liberal, being a good progressive, will you just turn away and say, well, they're ignorant? Or will you confront it? And that, I suppose, is the $64 question. Will we, being liberals, tolerate this kind of filth? And I remind you of the old legal maxim that silence is acceptance. There's a groundswell of just craziness bubbling out everywhere. Poor little Flush Flemball's multi-million-dollar Oxycontin-addled brain is on the verge of exploding.
Now, back to General Powell. I just want to button this up because the drive-bys had a tizzy over my allegation that his nomination was about race. Well, let me say it louder, and let me say it even more plainly. It was totally about race. The Powell nomination or endorsement, totally about race.
Yeah. That's right. And see, even that has an undercurrent of racism to it. that Colin Powell, you know, he was elevated. Why? And Flimball said this over the weekend. What about all the white people that helped him out on the... My friends, white people made him who he is today. And this is how he thanks them. There you go. Yeah, because see, you know, Colin Powell's one of, you know, those people. And they don't have the sense or the intelligence to make a calculated, even though Colin Powell sat there on the Meet the Prostitutes and laid out line by line and issue by issue, cogently and as honestly as Colin Powell is capable of being, why he is supporting Barack Obama, and tacitly blamed this kind of rhetoric, that filth that flows out of Flush Flimball's mouth, as part of the reason he's doing it. Nope, my friends, it's only because it's about race. You know, this, of course, is a guy who makes $40 million a year for such radio broadcasting gems as telling an African-American caller to phone him back after he got the bone out of his nose, and saying that Jesse Jackson looks like all of the wanted posters, or all of the wanted posters at the post office look like Jesse Jackson, or that the NAACP needed to start a class in how to rob liquor stores. Yeah. No kidding. And it's going to go through November 4th, and then it's going to continue. And the fight is to us. The choice is to us. The choice is to you and I. Whether we will tacitly condone it by our silence, or whether we will affirmatively and positively oppose it with our voices, with our minds, and with all the strength that we have in us. But it wasn't just a freak like Flush Flimball. No. It was George Will, too. George Will. You know, shows up in a bow tie every now and then. And this time through, well, hear it for yourself.
This morning we just found out that former Secretary of State General Colin Powell has said he's going to vote for Barack Obama. Big impact?
Some impact. And I think this adds to my calculation. This is very hard to measure, but it seems to me if we had this tools to measure, we'd find that Barack Obama gets 2 votes because he's black. For everyone, he loses because he's black, because so much of this country is so eager, A, to feel good about itself by doing this, but more than that, to put paid to the whole Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson game of political rhetoric.
What, Edith? Huh? Yeah, that's right. The white people are stupid, too. See, that's the thing that none of these people can get, is that we've actually looked at the policies enunciated by the two candidates, and that even on his best day, Lumpy McHoover is just nuts. But it couldn't possibly be that their darling of conservatism is a little, you know, No. It's all because Barack Obama, you know, he's one of them. And the white liberals are trying to get rid of their white guilt. And the black liberals, well, they'd vote for anybody that come down the path as long as he's the same color. They're just not that sharp. Phew. Mother McCree. Better go get one of those institutional-sized shower heads, because you're going to be wanting a lot of them for a while now. This is going to be a hell of a fight. And gird up thy loins. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita.
I heard something on C-SPAN understand, probably a week ago, somebody calling in and puts me in mind of this, only it wasn't any cursing, but it was somebody that was a right-wing Christian, and they were saying that if they lost, there would be a price to pay. To me, it just sounded like a threat.
It is a threat.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're down to. They can't win on policy. They can't win on issues. Their vaunted white guys have driven this country into the dirt.
That's right.
And they would rather wallow in poverty than be led by a man of color.
And you know, you just never know what you're missing. You just like Mandela, look how people treated him, and he became one of the greatest presidents of that country. He treated the white people equally.
Sure.
You know, as nice as they did. These people are so doomed to their own self, doing their own self in. But
they would rather bury a candle and curse the darkness. You know what I mean, Juanita?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Barbara Walters was on The View today.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, they were talking about the different things, and Barbara brought up that why was Sarah, you know, continually saying the small town people were the real Americans.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was her or one of the others said something about that. What about New York City? They were the ones that were bombed, you know. And Barbara she brings up, you know, about what's that man's name? The terrorist?
No, the non-terrorist? Yeah, William Ayers.
Anyway, Barbara says to her, what is it that you want from Obama? What is it you're accusing him of? She just straight out asked her. And, of course, she never gave a good answer. She just, that's the political talking points they have now, and she's sticking to it. And, of course, when they bring up Keating Five, well, he was clear of that. And then if they bring up about Palin, then, oh, no, well, she didn't, you know, she didn't mean any harm by that. And she, you know, was misquoted or whatever.
Well, see, what you're describing there, Juanita, is the broad-spectrum approach of the belief-based community, not the knowledge-based, but the belief-based
right.
community. They can excuse any of the hate that Sarah Palin exhorts in her crowds. They can excuse that by saying they don't believe she meant anything by it because they darn sure don't know it. They have no empirical knowledge of it.
Well, Barbara...
But they don't believe it.
Barbara says, I'm sick of this. She said, I don't like that. And she said, I am sick of it. She said, I'll be glad when this election's over. But she said that... she was sick of them, you know, not with the crowds and all like that.
But that's where Barbara is wrong. It doesn't end with the election, Juanita.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to continue.
Yeah. And but I thought that was kind of interesting that she did say that, you know, and she calls herself neutral or whatever you call it, nonpartisan. But I thought for a while, I mean... Elizabeth just has a way about her, and I thought for a while that Whoopi was going to go into a tailspin.
But she didn't jump across the couch or anything. Yeah, all right.
But she made some odd noises. But anyhow,
those kind of gurgly kind of sounds. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have to. It'd be worth watching just to see her cry. I'm sure she's very frustrated because, but anyway, they were talking about how she was on Saturday Night Live and Sarah Palin. And anyway, I have a question about her. Has she shown her medical records yet?
That would be
no. And you know,
because if Sarah Palin put out her medical records, we would find a curious absence of, you know, a birth a year or so ago.
That's what I was thinking, and I was thinking nobody said anything about it lately. I heard it about a couple of weeks ago about wondering when she. They said she would. Did she say she would after the election?
I don't recall that, but
well, something.
Like, yeah, well, but you know, if Sarah Palin released,
man,
if Sarah Palin did release her medical records, then she would have to explain how she also hid the pregnancy from her gynecologist.
Right. Yeah, that was what I was got to wondering. I got to thinking about, you know, you forget all these things. There's so many things going on. But I'm in agreement with you about Powell. I mean. In fact, I've never seen what people saw in him. I mean, I guess I'm just not.
Well, I think a lot of people saw stability in him before he took his reputation out and just stomped it in the mud by shilling for this phony world war crime in Iraq and arguably Afghanistan. But there are a lot of people out there, and they like to say that. Well, you know, he was the level-headed one in the Bush administration.
Uh-huh.
Well, so he was the level-headed liar who didn't go out and mangle the language the way that George does.
And I don't like his son either.
No.
Well, it's not. I don't like Colin Powell. I just don't get it. I guess I've never gotten it, what it was about him. You know, they were talking about he was the greatest general of our time or something. I can't believe that.
No, because he enunciated the Powell Doctrine that if you bombed everything that moved, you'd win. Yeah, that takes a lot of brains.
I don't know, but I didn't ever like Schwarzkopf either. Is that his name?
Stormin' Norman. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's supporting... McCain. but Obama's sort of happy, I think, about getting that support. But, you know, so he likes it. But I just think that Powell has just done a disservice to this country for that speech he made, because a lot of people that were against the war became for it. After they heard him, because they trusted him, he was, you know, seemed to be the most trustworthy in that cabinet. And I think he sort of had to apologize for it, but I don't know.
Well, that was supposed to be his mea culpa was his refusal to participate in the. Second Bush mini Reich, you know, after the 2004 elections.
Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm gonna go back to what you played, that sweet voice woman.
Mm-hmm.
and there are a lot of them, aren't there?
Yeah.
Sweet voice. But anyhow, it reminded me of that man, the black guy that they. Dragged to death in Texas.
Yes.
And I may have told you this before, but Radio Left, you know, that was David, I think his name was Tappet, used to be on there. And he worked with those people, the family.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a wonderful family. That could have been a riot in that town, but they said they didn't want it. Because the Ku Klux Klan came and the black Muslims came and they didn't want to write. And anyway, he was with the daughter when they went to see the then Governor Bush, where she pleaded with him to pass the hate crimes legislation.
Right.
And they said that when she went in there, she just was talking and she was crying and he was just staring at her. Never said nothing. Never offered her a Kleenex or nothing.
No, 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 no.
And then that was it. He never said anything. Not a thing.
Because he didn't care.
No. Anyway, he they did pass that hate law, but he didn't support it. But then during the 2000 election, he claimed that he passed one.
Because I'm a conservative, compassionate decider, dude. Yeah.
And did you hear about McCain's black relatives in Mississippi?
In fact, I was just looking for that story because...
It's on Buzzflash. I haven't read it
yet. That's the thing. I don't know. Maybe McCain should have made more of that instead of this business about him being from Arizona. Heck no, he's just an interloper. He's not from anybody.
Right.
Or anywhere. He was born in Panama, and he, you know, lived wherever the Navy sent his family, and then he went to wherever he thought he had the best chance of getting making some political hay once he started collecting his VA benefits.
Yeah.
And after he'd, of course, walked out on his wife and all that other upright family values kind of stuff that John McCain did. He's a Mississippian. And
I didn't know that until recently.
And see, his father was a Navy. His father, he touts the fact that they've got a Navy tradition because his father was a naval admiral and his grandfather was an admiral in the Navy. But when you go back to the real roots of Clan McCain, why they were Confederate cavalry soldiers, cavalry officers in the war between the states. Absolutely.
They must have kept some of their money.
And they owned a plantation, and they had slaves, and they fathered bastard children on their slaves.
Yeah.
And there is every 2 years there's a McCain homecoming down in Mississippi, and McCain has even been to it.
Well, they had a picture of him with his brother. And
was that with his brother? Okay, maybe I didn't look at the photo long enough.
Yeah, I think because he didn't go. He didn't go to it.
Okay.
His brother went to it. And, God, I tell you, he gets curiouser and curiouser, doesn't he?
And meaner.
Yeah.
But that's the true history of Clan McCain. They're from the Old South. And for all we know, like so many Confederate cavalry soldiers after the Civil War, they became Knight Riders.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
You got to remember, it was a Confederate cavalry officer, Nathan Bedford Forrest, wasn't it, who founded the Ku Klux Klan in Pulaski, Tennessee. I do believe.
I'm sure. Mine was always heard when I was growing up that it was to protect white women. What a joke.
Yeah, right. Family values. Joke. Yeah, they used to use family values to describe, to justify the Klan's existence.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But anyway, it just really gets stranger and stranger all the time.
Well, it does.
I'm one of the people look on the other side of the world what they think about our having somebody like that running for office, these two people. Running for the highest offices in the land.
I know. Juanita, good to hear from you, dear. I'm going to roll
along.
Okay,
and you take care and have a good evening. And
all right.
So you're going to have a guest on?
No.
Guess I misunderstood.
No worries. No, it's just us this evening.
Okay.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Our pal Juanita down in Central Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, General Bob.
Hey, what's up, Albert?
I'll tell you what, buddy. you know, I feel crazy during the weekend. And then you come on, it just, I missed you, Bob. I mean...
Oh, you wouldn't believe the number of times over the course of a weekend that I think about you and the other folks in the audience here going, oh, you know, when I saw the Powell thing, it's like, oh, what are they thinking?
Yeah. But, you know, what a filthy, degenerate, just scat muncher Rush Limbaugh has proven himself to be over and over again. You know, I want to know how much longer, you know, like, they always try to like preempt us, you know, like they try to say, oh no, they're socialists. When really they just want to use that socialism like the Nazis did and use the socialism as window dressing for fascism.
Right.
And say, oh, no, you're racists. When the racist aspect, that's their ace in the hole. I mean,
that's why they were hoping for a nice close election. Because in the United States of America, Albert, you know it and I know it, any election that's within 1 or 2 percentage points can be decided by racists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you what, this election is going to prove one thing and one thing only. It's do we, right? It's the age-old question. Do we really evolve? You know, have we evolved? I mean, you know, this is like a measure, a yardstick of our evolution. And in a sense, it's not so much white guilt. That has nothing to do with it. You know, I wasn't, you know, I think Barack Obama has proven himself as a human being. Like, I've seen him talk, and I watch him, and I don't know. I'm not the kind of person that sees color like that. But I'll tell you what, I want my $64, because if anybody says anything like that to me, or in front of me like that, they're going to leave there crying. Because I am just going to whiplash him with my tongue. I'm going to go drill instructor on him. Like,
maggot!
Seriously. No, yeah, exactly. You are disgust. I mean, and I won't say the nice word. I know we kind of, what I prefer not to. But at the same time, I mean, I can, you don't say anything like that anywhere near. Because, yeah, and the other thing is I usually have my children with me. So, oh boy. I'd suck some energy from there, and I'd really overload on them. They would leave there crying. I don't care what. I've done it before. I've made grown men cry. I can do it again. I'll tell you what, you talk like that, especially at what's at stake. I mean, the cost here is astronomical. I mean, this bailout doesn't even come close to what the cost is. For any of that. I mean, if McCain is in, and this stuff is, I mean, look at the racism and the filthy degenerate. They're just in panic mode. Just, it's that one. I mean, you know, and he did. McCain did. I thought John Stewart did an outstanding job when McCain, he let out the beast, right?
And the beast, yeah, the 10,000 McCainiacs.
Yeah, that was just awesome. Because, you know, it was exactly what it is. He unleashed this monster. And, you could say he's got racist, you know, tendencies. He certainly has never proven himself otherwise. I mean, you know, like, if we're going to call spades a spade, why did he adopt that child? To look a certain way?
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to say like things like that because we're liberal, but, you know, we're over here dealing with pigs. We're dealing with demons that do things intentionally for this purpose.
You remember, Albert, do you remember Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the TV series?
I didn't watch it.
They had this little animated creature that would come across the screen after every episode, and he went, arr, arr. That's the entire McCain platform. Arr, arr. He's just cranky and pasty and scared.
Oh, and he's. I tell you what, he's falling apart. That man is falling apart. Every time my kids see him, they say zombies. I mean, he's just falling apart. And, you know, he's falling apart, you know, physically and spiritually and, you know, just the guy is disgusting. I mean, he proves it so much, it's just like, I didn't want to hate him. I don't want to hate him even now. But, my God, how much lower are we going to go? Are we really going to go as low as this already? I mean,
do you take issue with me, Albert, insofar as my position that this doesn't end on November 4th?
Oh, hell no, General. This begins. This begun now. It's already started. There ain't no beginning or ending. You know, this ain't even like that. But no, you're exactly right. There ain't no ending. I mean, like, in a sense, it's kind of a beautiful thing that these freaks, I mean, they're freaks. That's what they are. That these freaks are, you know, did you see that one lady that Crooks and Liars had on? With the big old eyes and her husband and praying in Jesus and all this other stuff. Did you see her? Anyway, what a freak that one was. Anyway, that's the mentality, you know, exuded by, oh, he's one of them hanging from an oak tree. And I mean, come on now. This kind of crap is so abhorrent. This is Nazi stuff. Right? What did the Nazis do that everybody gets so upset about? Well, it wasn't really that they invaded Poland. I never hear anybody bitch about that. I don't hear, you know, look what they did to the French. You know, I never hear that. You know, oh, look, they took Africa. Oh, I don't hear any of that. You hear about the concentration camps, right? Well, why? Why? Why is this so abhorrent? Well, it's hatred driven into genocide. Well, isn't this approaching that? I mean, isn't this approaching that at all? I mean, granted, look at what the mentalities are. They're not related. These aren't cousins. That isn't a similar way of thinking. I mean, racism. Just the mere fact that you have that bone in your body can lead you to do some pretty ugly things. And that's not the direction we need to be headed. This is, and that's the beast he's unleashing. So hopefully now that this is out there and we see this, we can slay this beast. You can't kill it until you can see it. You know, and so what if we're the alien, you know, like, in, you know, we're the guys, we're all bloodied and battered, you know. And if we can get the thing into the light, we can see it, we can grab it for what it is. We can just relinquish this fear, because that's what this big thing is. You know, I got those messages. You know, I got all those emails. Remember the emails? And I got those when those were going on a while back there. And I pretty much just wrote to them, the fear is the mind killer. You know, in a sense, because that's exactly what they're trying to do. In a sense, maybe they're afraid, too, and they just don't know it's okay to not be afraid. You know what I'm saying? But I know I'm giving sympathy to the beast, but I'll tell you what, buddy, this thing has to get slain. It has to be cut out of us. Because the only way we cut it out is we just let go of it. Like, these kinds of people, they should be embarrassed. They should seriously be embarrassed for themselves. I mean, to say the things that they say with no grasp, and maybe that's the biggest outrage of it all, is that they don't even have a grasp of history. To sit there and, like, realize what they're saying when they say hang from a tree. They never put themselves, they have no empathy, they don't have an empathetic bone in their body. And you know what? I've always found pain to be a good teacher. And what led me to my empathies is my own emotional pain and things of that nature. So maybe, you know, this election, maybe we don't have to do anything except vote, you know, stand up straight, look at them. Maybe look at them with a dignity like Barack Obama does. I mean, he does. He looks pale. He barely even twitches his forehead. See, like, me, I'd be freaking, you know, I'd take a flamethrower to this place kind of guy. But he takes it cool. He does it the right way. And that's kind of where you got to look at him. Kind of like sometimes when your kid does something wrong and they look at you and you just give them a look and they know.
Yeah, that sidelong sort of, no, wait till we get home.
I'll tell you what, my kids mostly, the things they'll get upset about, I'm like, you know, they'll start crying if I get upset. Well, what are you crying about, you know? You just wrote on my wall or something like that, something, you know, kid-like, that you know you shouldn't have done. And they'll be like, you're mad at me now. You know, in a sense, maybe that's what these sick, yeah, I know there's going to be the blackest, there's the unsalvageable, okay? But there are those that really, all they need is a good looking at. They need to be confronted. They're bullies. You know that whole bully mentality.
But, you know, that essay that struck such a profound chord with me, Albert, by Tim Wise, that I put out there and just read it the other night before the debate. There was a line in there that just blew my doors off because it said, you know, it said that when these racist, fascist thugs start talking around us, they're assuming that they're talking for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're expecting mm-hmm. us to agree.
Yep.
And when we remain silent, they take it as that we did agree.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not exactly on the same par, but last week when my when the pharmacist looked at me and said, "Well, that's socialism. We can't. You don't want socialism, do you?" And I said, "Fine by me." Because you've got to get these people in the teeth. They've got to understand without any doubts whatsoever that they're not speaking for us.
Well, exactly. My crazy right-wing in-law, I remember talking about, this is back when gas, I've been telling them for years, you know, they don't listen to me, but, you know, because I'm a, what do they call them, a lost. Anyway.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And the
you mean you're not going to get raptured up all naked?
I had a dream like that once, but I don't think, not according to their rules, so who knows. Anyway, you know, I sit here, and he says to me, he's like, you know, this is before I think any president had been selected yet. You know, we didn't have any candidates. And we're talking about, oh, we got to drill, you know, because they've been saying this mantra for quite a while. I mean, just like they've been saying their racism for years and years. You know, what is the Salvos, you know, why are they Republicans for the last 30 years? Oh, because all the racist Democrats are kicked out. And they turn to Republican. Anyway, you know, so we sit here, and he says to me, you know, he's like, oh, yeah, you know, they want to go destroy Alaska. Now, he went and he spent some time up in Alaska and did fishing and all that other stuff. And, you know, I would think that he hunted up there, and he hunted for moose lips and everything else. You know, I would think that he would be at least sympathetic to, oh, we don't want to freaking destroy that environment. You know, it's a nice little egg, you know, isolated, huh? Wrecked and destroyed now, half partially, but they want to destroy it all. Anyway, so he says, you know, I'm like, well, they're not even going to see that oil for 10 years. I'm like, whoa, what are we going to do then? I go, well, there's, you know, alternatives. You can't, if we got to the moon in 10 years, you don't think we can maybe get off of gas in 10 years? You know, don't you think that's at least even something to just strive for? You know, maybe they're just lazy. I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just, you know, that's why we'll let the market do it. Oh, you know, we hate big government. Oh, come save us. You know, oh, where's the laws to, you know, protect me from being outraged by Muslims? And, you know, I think we're kind of seeing that. I mean, we're right here, right at the cutting zone, but the whole world is watching this. You know, the whole world is watching this. And for, you know,
the whole world is watching, and that brings me to something, Albert. You know, the right wing freaks. You may recall Jerome Corsi got himself arrested in Kenya when he went over to try to sleaze Obama and his family there. Well, not really arrested; they just politely took him away and didn't let him do it. Well, World Nut Daily sent this blast email around. An African news agency claims Michelle Obama placed a surprise call to protest its coverage of WND investigative stories about her husband, characterizing the source of the material as racist and Jerome Corsi as evil.
Mm-hmm.
The call was placed to African Press International, according to a report in the publications today. What publications? It said Michelle Obama accused API of colluding with American internet bloggers in an effort to bring down her husband.
Yeah, she sounds like. I can see her doing it. I mean, she's. I mean, they're probably, you know, lesbians too, and you know, if they're Muslim, you know, they probably sacrifice babies. And I mean, you hear the garbage these people spew. They're so uninformed and so. They're just miscreants. They're mental miscreants. I mean, they don't think, and they. It's funny when they sit there and pretend to act like they do. You know, I think we're going to see a revolution of intelligence, Bob. I think the smart people are going to start talking up. I think the smart people are getting a little fed up with it. You know, the smart people get, you know, they get their little things. They don't want to get into it. But I think we're going to see, you know, these dummies just can't go on like this. They just can't. It just, you know, the party, somebody's got to be an adult. You know, someone's got to turn the lights off for these people. I mean, good Lord. What are they talking about? It's racist. I see, that was the part about it that made me kind of just, I laughed and I cringed at the same time about the Powell thing. Because I knew instantaneously, I think I'm one of the first commenters on that Crooks and Liars thing. I mean, instantaneously, I knew that they were going to sit there and be like, oh, he's just saying that because he's black. Did you see? Here it is. They're sticking together again.
I
mean, come on. Come on. It's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. It's just, Bob?
Yeah, but I know, but it's ridiculous to us. You got to consider those, consider that woman that showed up on Now on PBS. You know,
I think that's the lady. Yeah.
Yeah, there she, here she comes.
I just hope it stays running until I can retire.
While Sean is wrestling with his decision, his wife Tracy firmly supports the McCain-Palin ticket. So we wanted to hear from her as well.
What's the most important issue for you in this election?
The one that has the most faith in the Lord.
That's make or break for you.
That should be make and break for everybody.
And when you hear people saying, well, we understand your faith, but what if you're going to vote against your husband's interests as an American worker?
The Lord will take care of us.
Live on hay, day by day, there'll be pie in the sky when you die.
This election is not so much about policies as it is about values.
I like this next.
She says she doesn't feel like Barack Obama shares her conservative religious worldview.
I can't imagine having a president of the United States being named President Obama. I really have a problem with that, and I am not the only one.
Because that means what to you?
His background. My mother that was an atheist. Oh, that really gets to me. Father that was a Muslim. That should get to everyone.
And when Barack Obama and his wife, Michelle, say, but we're faith-based, we're Christians.
The church they were members of? That's not the Christianity I know. That's not the Christianity that's in the Bible.
No, honey, you know you know the Christianity where there's none of them kind of people in your pews on Sunday morning. And Jesus was a white boy? Mm-hmm, yes.
Amen, Ra.
Yeah. And I'm proud to be American.
Yeah. Idiocracy. It's unbelievable. Hey, did you put the last part? Did we miss it?
Wait a minute.
I like that last.
You are firmly decided.
Definitely.
And what do you say to your husband who is still on the fence?
I will pray for him. He knows what the right decision is.
Yeah. The right decision is divorce.
Yeah.
For real.
Oh, dude. You know, he needs to get in the Yellow Pages. There's, you know.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Get a do-it-yourself kit for $25.99. That is horrible. I won't even get. I'm not even going to go any further into that, but I'm glad you played it because everybody needs to hear that. I'm all about people's privacy, but sometimes cameras are a damn good thing because they can show you. Like, I'll tell you what, when I see stupid things, like when I see really stupid things, like when I see kids doing tricks without rollerblades, I mean, on their rollerblades with no helmet on, and they pop their skull or something like that, they got all those videos online, you know.
Yeah.
And I think people sometimes hurt themselves just to get online. But anyway, you know, experience. That's like, you know, sitting there going, all right, now I can show this to my kids and say, you see this? Yeah, you see that? Yeah. What do you do? Oh, A, not do that, and B, I'll wear a helmet, Daddy.
Well, and in this case, you know, this was on Now on PBS, so you know this couple was comfortable talking to the camera lady. Well, I don't even think we get, you know, they're down in Texas somewhere. I don't even think we get that PBS around here. They ain't got to worry about none of the good people at the church are seeing it, so it's going to be all right. They won't know my husband's a heathen who might vote for one of them.
Ooh, that's gross. Ooh.
Yeah, I know. Just from the top of your head, just, you know, whole full body shiver, isn't it?
I knew you were sick, but I never actually thought I'd hear you say that kind of stuff.
I'm a recovering Southern Baptist, brother.
I had to give you a little Dr. Gonzo quote there. All right, I'm going to let you go. But I missed you. I'm glad you're back. I'm glad it's Monday.
Yeah, me
only
too.
A little bit more to go, and then you know, we'll have a little celebration and get right to work.
Absolutely. All right, take care, Albert.
All right, brother.
Later, bud. So that's the first hour. We'll take a little break and come back. A little musical interlude for you. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. The more we're supported, the better chance of our voice getting stronger and stronger. It's been a tough month so far. This is The Horn, and we'll be back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304 854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Turn tootin', and how can you not play the Electric Light Orchestra's Sweet Talking Woman after that soundbite from that Fundy freak in God Knows Where?
I'll pray for him.
I can do. Oh, we try to do family radio, and sometimes it's such a challenge. Because it would be so much fun. Talking about video on the radio, dancing about architecture again. But go over to Crooks and Liars and see that video. If I was that man, I'd been. How can you stay married to something that dumb? I mean, he's apparently not completely stupid. He's actually thinking about voting for that one. So there's a little bit of hope for him. But his wife is a complete and unutterable moron, without a doubt. Kind of makes you feel sorry for the poor feller. Let's do go back to the phones, see what's shaking. Oh, lost him. Well, you'll have that from time to time. You know, I said it had been a thin month of October so far, and it has been. And frankly, I credit a lot of the reason for that to the political process, because it's not just us. A lot of, you know, people, all sorts of internet-based operations are feeling a real pinch. And it's because this political campaign, you know, it's brilliant when you see that Barack Obama has... What, $115 million in the month of September that he's raised that? But it's not that he sucked all the oxygen out of the room. It's all the money. So we still, you know, we still have the bills that we have. And we don't get a break for them. They don't say, well, you know, Bob, send us a check when the election's over. It just is what it is. And here we are well past halfway into October, and we're not even to halfway for the monthly fundraising goal. It's mighty tough, I tell you. And that is not in any way to, because the sacrifices that people who do contribute make to make sure that we stay on the air are Herculean ones, and we know it. We just need more like them. We really, really do. So that's, you know, that's what I mean when I say that it's been thin so far through the first part of October. A little programming note. I am not entirely certain if I will be on the air tomorrow. I have a meeting that I have to attend tomorrow afternoon, and it's far enough away I may not be able to get back to get behind the microphone in time. However, if I do, I'll make every effort to be here. And, you know, if it's just a few minutes late rolling in, we'll start a little late, okay? So that's where that stands. So just, you know, just a little advisory thing, okay? And let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
Hey, this is Diana up in Olympia, Washington.
Diana, how are you? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear your voice. You know, I turn on your show, and sometimes I see recordings. Like today, they had a recording of James' show.
Well, yeah, I mean, we run the the rerun stream goes 24/7, so that was one of Guy's previous shows until he goes back live tomorrow.
Said, well, I'll turn it back on at 3 and see if Bob's on live, because I really enjoy your show the best. I shouldn't say that because I don't want to hurt anyone else's feelings.
No, everybody's got their favorites. You know, John Fox and I were talking on his program last night. You know, Guy's my favorite. Sorry, I mean, you just kind of...
Well, I guess it's hard to be your own favorite. But, of course, you know, my husband and I, we go to bed, and we're laying there in bed. My husband broke his arm. We're trying to restart our house in this miserable weather, and he broke his arm. So I'm doing it by myself with his one arm. But anyhow, to make that, I'm just looking forward to a big party. And I'm not a party girl, neither is my husband. We're kind of deadbeat, but we're good liberals. And I think we're all going to have to party on November 5th or November 4th, because I really am feeling good. Now, I know everyone's not supposed to overshoot the feeling good message right now, because it looks like Icky over there, I call him Icky because I can't stand the sound of his voice, George W.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Some speech out today that said that we're feeling better about it because something about the economy seems like it's getting better now, you know, because the stock market's gone up and they're going to infuse some money in there. And
oh, they're infusing money. I've got a story about where some of that money's getting infused, too, and the only person out there raising a ruckus about it's Dennis Kucinich.
I know, but, you know, can I tell you something? My husband works for the bank,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, I don't want to throw in anything anti-Dennis, but it's one thing when you're out there working for a bank, and you realize your bank was the one that didn't do all the subprime stuff.
Right, right.
And they're the ones that had to buy out another bank to save the bank. You know what I mean?
Sure. I'm not.
So in a way, you know, I mean, my husband's been in banking 30-some years. And he's actually 62 now. And
well, I've got friends who work at small community-based banks. And they work hard and they manage the money that they're entrusted with impeccably. Right. It's not those guys. It's not those women that got us into this mess. It's the speculators. It's the people who it's the people who said what you make 29 cents every 2 weeks? We're gonna loan you $250,000.
Well, yeah, and I told my husband, what are derivatives and what are these credit swaps and what are these, what are all these things they're doing? And he said, it's really playing with the speculation and it's just playing with air because there's nothing behind it except risk. And so what they were doing was just risking the money of the mortgagees to play craps, really.
Yeah, it was. It was a big trip to Atlantic City.
Well, his bank didn't do that.
No,
he got out of it way, way, way before they knew to get out of it. And anyhow, so I mean, Dennis, I think should have voted for that. But I admire Dennis for a lot of things. But you know, we can't just let the country go down the tube. You look at what FDR did. He put in the FDIC. He put in Social Security. He put in all these programs that hopefully will help keep this from really getting bad.
Right, and we got to where we were with the subprime crisis and the meltdown. Diana, we got there by virtue of tearing down the stuff that liberal Democrats had put in place. I mean,
well, and these things that they dreamed up in the 90s by J.P. Morgan's bank, they were the ones who dreamed up these credit swaps and these derivative things. And it wasn't something that back in 1932 they knew was going to come about. And the thing I blame Clinton for is that he was the one who could have said, hey, we've got to regulate these guys back in 1999.
Well, it wasn't that we've got to regulate them. It was an active deregulation, Diana. And, of course, it's worth remembering that that was all, you know, before a president ever signs a bill, it's passed by a Congress. And that whole deregulation scam was a function of right-wing GOP, private enterprise can do no wrong, they'll look after it themselves, all that happy, miserable, stinking, stupid garbage. And they put it on Clinton's desk, and he said, yeah, all right, I reckon.
But they made it a voluntary regulation. Uh-huh.
Right. Well, that's the thing. Well, you know, that's like low-fat donuts. There's no such thing as voluntary regulation.
Right. And that's what, you know, it makes you so angry. But, I mean, I'm from my point of view and from my husband's point of view, not just because it affects his job or all our stock is in banks, believe it or not, but that's what we're going to retire on. And we went down 20% our retirement in one weekend.
Yeah, y'all did. But guess what? The people at the head of the pyramid scheme at J.P. Morgan Chase and Citibank and all, you know, even the ones that went under, the guy that was running Lehman, you know, he's not eating beans. He's still a billionaire or multimillionaire at the least.
Yeah, I saw him testifying with that guy from California. What's his name? His House Committee on Oversight.
Yes. Can't think of his name either. Sorry.
Yeah, he's really a pretty good guy. But, you know, the thing is, we've got when Barack Obama gets in there, it's like you said, it's not going to end about the racism and all that crap from the fat boy in Miami. But what's going to happen is that we have to hold their feet to the fire, because I'd like to see Pelosi out of there and put someone else in there who can really be the driver of this thing. And if all this work and all this money that I've sent to Barack Obama, if he isn't really for the little guy, we're going to find out within 100 days. Because that's what they say it takes most of these guys, the first 100 days or first 6 months.
Yeah, that's the honeymoon. And then the gloves come off and you begin to see what's good. Right. I understand what you're saying completely. And look. There's no getting away from the fact that, I mean, look at the fundraising he did. And if you, well, that's too much speculation even for me. But suffice to say, Diana, that as long as the dirty money fuels the system, as long as contributed money like this runs the show, then big money donors are going to have louder voices than $5 donors. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so, therefore, they're going to get listened to a lot more attentively than you or me or, you know, the people who, you know, for whom, you know, $5, $10, $20, $25, $50 is a real sacrifice. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not the level of sacrifice that gets the ear. It's the level of money.
Yeah. Well, I'm just, my husband, you know, is very knowledgeable about economics. And, I mean, when he was in high school, he wanted to be a physicist. So, I don't know, I said, why didn't you go into that instead of banking? But, no, he's a real sweetheart of a guy. But I'm just hopeful that on November 4th, all this ugliness, this horror, it's like a horror. Remember that line that from Apocalypse Now, I think it was.
Yeah, the horror. Yeah, it comes from Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Yeah.
Yeah, right. But I'm just hopeful that on November 5th that we can all kind of take a short, you know, deep breath and just relax a little, because you can't imagine the amount of screaming, and I hate to admit it, but swearing that goes on in my house at that television. And every time we see George Bush or we see even Nancy Pelosi, when she would not impeach Bush.
Oh.
How many use for the woman? And she had been a liberal. What happened to her?
Well, it depends on...
$10 million.
Right. But
where does that money go? Probably from China. She's like Dianne Feinstein. All her money comes from China. Her husband has some big connections with China.
Well, Dianne, don't forget, some of Dianne Feinstein's husband's money comes from the blood of American soldiers, too. He's deeply connected with the war and bloodshed industry.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I do like Barbara Boxer, though.
Well, I do too. And you talk, about taking time out for a little party. Well, without a doubt, we will. And if the news is good on election night, we're going to have what the for-profit media calls team coverage, Diana, on election night. I'll be here. Mark Levine will be here. I don't mean here, but we'll all be together. John Fox will be with us. Guy James will be with us. Hopefully we'll connect everybody, all kinds of people, and we'll just have a big old what was election day like and what are you looking forward to and what do you think and which state just turned blue thing going on. But again, it's not so much that I'm a pessimist, Diana. It's that I'm a realist. And I know that these
I'm hope a little bit because I
well,
mean,
I am hoping a little bit, but I'm not.
Not a liberal.
Pardon?
The people pulled him over there, just like Tom Hartman says. The people have to pull you into doing the right thing. Hopefully you will do the right thing.
And we're going to have to work. Our hard work, those of us with an activist orientation, our hard work doesn't end on November 4th. It starts on January 20th.
That's right.
If Obama is elected.
Yeah, you know, I don't like the idea that he has Robert Rubin on his team. That's the architect of the whole deal.
Well, you know, for us around here, it those of us who would like to wholeheartedly support him, we cringe mightily, Diana, every time he says that I support clean coal technology. It just makes you crazy because clean coal technology isn't a technology; it's an advertising slogan. Okay,
I know.
It's like new and improved coal.
Yeah, I mean, why can't they go under the mountain? Why do they have to take the top of it down? It's just insane.
Because it's more profitable. One guy, no pun intended, one person working on a mountaintop removal job can produce as much as $50 million worth of coal per year, and for that he's paid maybe $30,000, $40,000, $50,000.
Oh, man.
That's a bargain. You know, there's no track to be laid, there's no holes to be dug, there's no timbers to be there's no roof bolting to be done. None of that. There's no water to be pumped out.
How long can they keep that up?
Well, they hope to keep it up until either the rules change and they get to take their money with them when they die, or until they've destroyed every mountain that's got a seam of coal under it.
Well, and I was noticing, too, that up in northern Canada, they're doing some kind of strip mining, too, with this I don't know if it's coal or natural gas or something that they're strip mining up there, too.
Oh, I know what you're talking. It's not oil, shale. It is, and I can't think of what it is, the name of it. But, it's a horrible mining practice.
The boreal forest?
Sure.
Oh, well.
But we've got to educate Obama on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And I do think the man is a decent human being. I mean, and then that, I'll tell you another thing that just irks me is, believe it or not, because we thought, you remember when NAFTA was the big thing?
Yeah.
My husband and I actually sent $25, the worst money we ever sent, to Pat Buchanan because he was one of the great speakers against NAFTA. It's the only Republican I ever sent money to. And that guy has had some of the meanest things to say against Obama and so pro that pukey little Palin that it's just, I can't believe he could sell his soul like that.
Oh, he didn't sell his soul. You got her, Diana, he cut his teeth sitting at the feet of Richard Nixon. He's the one that gave us the word portrait of Nixon after he resigned in disgrace, walking along the beach at San Clemente, lost in thought. That was Pat Buchanan.
You know, thank God he was lost.
Yeah. An email just rolled in from our pal Cindy, also up there in Washington State. She said, tell Diana that in 1929 the stock market crashed over derivatives. Same game, same group of thieves.
Huh.
So, yeah.
And they had credit default swaps then? That was sort of a new invention.
Well, they're new names for old cons.
Yeah. Well, I feel sorry the people in Iceland. I heard they went belly up. And I just couldn't figure that one out either, but I guess they were involved in that too. And like I said to my husband, how could all these people be involved in that? All over the world, it was our mortgages. But he explained it to me, so I mean. But anyhow, I just wanted to let you know I'm out here listening to you, and I love you guys, especially you, and your wife is sweet. Does she still do any of that board work, or are you?
She does from time to time, but mostly she is a 24-hour-a-day mom and grandma now.
Oh, is she a nurse too?
And well, she doesn't. No, she's not out. Yeah, she's the official nurse and everything to the household.
Oh.
But she is trained as a nurse. Yes.
Oh. Well, anyhow, Bob, I just enjoy you very much, and I love listening to some of your callers, especially and. There's that one guy who calls from Maine or someplace up there. Is it Dave?
David calls from Maine sometimes, yeah.
And sometimes you guys have some good discussions that you've brought him around more than once.
Well, I enjoy our conversations with David and, of course, everyone else who calls in because that's what makes it a little bit special. It makes what's going on here a little bit special, Diana. Is that we have the luxury of being able to have real, honest-to-goodness, full-form conversations.
That's right.
And those are hard to come by elsewhere.
That's right. That's right.
Well,
Bob.
Please give our best regards to your husband, and I'm sorry about the busted wing, and I hope the home improvement project goes okay, but that's got to be tough to try to pull off the one-armed.
Giant tarp over the back of our two-story house. It looks like. You remember that movie Waterworld with all those sails?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe we'll be picked up and blown away.
Let's hope not. Oh, I hope not. Diana, have a wonderful evening.
You too, Bob. And we love you, like I said.
All right. Take care.
Hey.
Bye now. Calling from the great state of Washington, Diana. And a couple of emails rolling in along the way. Cossack reminding me, says, don't cut Bubba Clinton too much slack. If you'll remember, his Secretary of the Treasury was Bob Rubin, just like Hank Paulson, a former chairman of Goldman Sachs. Rubin and Phil Graham were working hand in glove to repeal Glass-Steagall. And reminds me that the congressman to whom Diana referred was Henry Waxman. Yeah, there was a collective mindset in the 90s that everything was sunshine and roses as far as the eye could see. And the fact of the matter is, the empirical data at that time suggested a lot of that. And nobody wanted to look at the fact that the dot-com boom was grounded on, air. It was on thin air. Just in many ways, much as this current crisis, that there was no solidity, there was no foundation underneath all the blow up in the market, and that stuff is not sustainable. Well, there's that word again, sustainability. It really does matter whether or not you can keep sustainability is just another word for survival. Can it survive? And we can apply it to human life, human society, human culture. But we can also apply it to principles of business and economics. You know, if you've got a factory that turns out imaginary invisible widgets, no matter how much media buzz you get out about it, and no matter how many PR press releases you put out about it, sooner or later people are going to, it's the story of the emperor's new clothes. That's the neat thing about fables. They're not necessarily about naked kings. The Emperor's New Clothes has a broad applicability. But then again, maybe I'm just nuts. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Bob. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
This is Robert from Japan.
That's what I thought.
You mentioned the key word fable, so, you know, I naturally had to call up. You know, I'm the fable guy.
Right, and that you are. Am I off base?
No, you're dead on. I mean, I think Daily Coast actually wrote a good article based on fables and economy a few weeks ago or months ago about there's the grasshopper economy of the Republicans where, you know, it's just in time, don't have any stocks, don't have any, inventory, because inventory and storage costs money. And then you have the ants that do store stuff up in, you know, for hard times. And so Republicans thinking that, you know, the magic hand of Adam Smith will always bring the goods no matter what. So don't have anything in your shelves. The grocery stores will always be stocked. And so don't worry. And so we've really become a nation of grasshoppers, you know. Don't have any storage up.
Well, that reminds me, I guess it was late last week that Mark Levine opened his show by talking about the Old Testament story of Joseph interpreting the Pharaoh's dream of the cows.
Oh, right. I was listening to part of that. Yeah, what was that all about?
Well, just he was drawing a comparison with that fable, that myth, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, we're talking about myths.
Right.
You know, where Joseph was a captive and, you know, he'd been sold into slavery in Egypt, but the Pharaoh was being tormented by these horrible dreams. And Joseph was the only one who was able to tell the Pharaoh what it meant. Now, I mean, when you hear what the dream was, that there were seven fat cows and then there were seven lean cows and the seven lean cows ate the seven fat cows, you got to think that Pharaoh's the soothsayers and seers and so forth were pretty well bush league not to be able to figure that one out. But
yep.
Joseph was the only one with the brains to do it. And he explained that it was that Pharaoh was dreaming about famine. And that there would be seven profoundly productive years, and then there would be seven famine years, and that the famine years would eat up the good years. So Pharaoh had the good foresight to put away grain in the granary and actually keep an inventory.
Well, I think an inventory is a damn good idea. I'm still, you know, my investment is still rice and beans, Bob. I'm still stocking up. I got about a year's worth of rice already. So
can't blame you.
Beans. Yeah, I mean, it's the most horrible question is if and when, and it's really basically not if, but more when, looking at this derivative crap, which blew my mind when Guy James told me about it. It's going to collapse, and then your spouse will turn to you as if to, and say, what are we going to do, honey? And your mind will just implode because it's like, what are we going to do? I mean, and it's a horrible question, but I think, you know, without having some
Robert, that the rest of the whole lot of the world, and we've talked about the assumptions that we make because we're sitting here using all this high technology to have this conversation, and there's still
right.
millions and millions of people who don't even live in the same country with a telephone.
Right.
The answer that when one spouse turns to the other and says, what are we going to do, honey, the other spouse, for millions of people on this planet, is going to look at his or her darling spouse and say, and the answer is very simple, and it's very stark, and it's very cruel and cold and hateful, and starve.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I get the impression that the Republicans do want to get rid of a lot of us, that the planet's getting simply too crowded, and it's the easiest way to do it. Warfare has too much blowback, I think, and so, yeah, starving the people is much easier.
Well, look, they can't.
I'm very cynical.
They're busting their butts to keep us from voting, and it's not just
yeah.
about keeping dark-skinned folks from voting, or people Latino folks from voting, or no, it's po folks, working folks. You know, the Republicans will gladly keep Republicans, working class Republicans from voting because they know that it all works out for them in the end. Here in West Virginia,
right.
we've got a burgeoning little crisis on our hands. Early voting opened up, and lo and behold, I don't know if you've seen the story or not, but lo and behold, it turns out that the first story was that, well, if you vote that straight ticket and then you go down and try to vote in the Supreme Court race, that the whole machine got sideways and topsy-turvy. That was round one. Round two was when an octogenarian World War II era fellow went and tried to vote, and he kept pressing Obama. And every time he pressed Obama, it would light up McCain. And he'd press Obama again, and it would light up McCain. And
wow.
he complained about it. And they said, well, you know, it's a... obviously, the touchscreen was probably not it's a calibration issue, or maybe you're not touching it right.
Wow.
So, well, I mean, so he did that, and now it turns out Putnam County voters are saying, oh, yeah, my votes got flipped a bunch.
Crap.
So, and
well, I mean, I'm so cynical. I get to the point where why are you almost bothering me with the Acorn stuff that's going, they're going to use that and beat that around our heads so when the vote is so close in Florida and Ohio and some other state, the Supreme Court will say, stop counting the damn votes. You know, we've done this before, people. There's a precedent, you idiots. And McCain's the man. I'm almost sure that's how it's going to work out.
Well, do you notice that the battleground states never turn out to be places like New York or Massachusetts or Illinois? The battleground states are always the Ohios, the Floridas.
Right.
Where the right wing knows that they've got at least a fighting chance of highly motivating the mouth breathing, knuckle walking, racist bigots to try to try and combining that with a bunch of disenfranchisement to try to bring it down to a neck and neck struggle in which mass voting by people who are motivated by fear and hate can win the day.
Mm. Well, I voted about 3 or 4 weeks ago, being an absentee ballot guy from Florida, been over it and having my ballot sent to me to way over here in Japan, of course. And I would tell your voters to take a, or your listeners to take a good look at their own ballots. I mean, if they can find them online somewhere, because the you know the Obama, the McCain, that's the easy part. The rest of it gets more a little bit more complicated. At least with my Florida ballot. You get into these judges, and you have to remember, judges are almost as important as the politicians, if not more so, because
sure.
They can really make or break your and I have on my ballot the Justice of the Supreme Court, and that was Charles D. Wells, and he turned out to be okay. Then you have First District Court, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of these. And I found that two of these were quite disgusting people. Judge Clay Roberts, I think, who was involved in the 2000 Bush, Florida election scam. So I voted no in retaining his ass. And then there was a Van Nortwick who was appointed by, I think, Jeb Bush. So Republicans going to nominate a Republican as far as I'm concerned. So it takes a little time to kind of figure out who these people are.
Yeah, voting, well, yeah. Robert, voting is not, it's not a... It's not a game.
It
requires preparation. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't see it that way. I mean, you mentioned how important the judges are. Here's another little scam out of West Virginia that you'll just love. This is just a beautiful thing. We got at least two circuit judges have pulled this stunt recently. One is a Repiglican by the name of Charlie. No, he's not. He's a Democrat. I think they're both Democrats. A guy named Charlie King and another one named Ferguson. These two judges are qualified for their retirements, but they're running for re-election unopposed. That's the key word, unopposed. So they have both retired from the bench, effective immediately.
Well.
So they have, having retired from the bench, they immediately qualified to draw a pension equivalent to about 80% of their salary, and a circuit judge in West Virginia is paid $116,000 a year.
Mm.
All right? So far, so good. This is great, huh? So they're going to take a two-month vacation and start drawing their pension, and then after they're reelected, since they're unopposed, they'll come out of retirement onto the bench, and they will draw their $116,000 a year salary plus their pension.
Wow.
Nice racket, huh?
I'm telling you. Well, I mean, it's as you said. I mean, some of these, even these Democrats, you have to really be careful. I found one of my county commission that pretty much wanted to sell all the water in Wakulla County, where I'm based, off to a company, and pretty much leave all the people with wells high and dry. So that was Alan Brock, and then there's a Jenny Brock. I'm not even sure that's his wife. So she turned out to be more. A little bit more saner, but I mean, you got a lot of Democrats that are actually Republicans in disguise, and you got to figure out who's who.
Sure, and that's a typically Southern, or it used to be a typically Southern phenomenon, and it still happens in places like West Virginia as well.
Oh, yeah, major, yeah.
Because there are still counties here where you just, there's no sense in filing to run if you're filing as a Republican. You're going to lose. Whoever gets nominated as the Democrat in May, that's when the, you know, that's when the real election takes place.
Exactly.
And those people, you can't tell if they're Republicans or Democrats. I mean, for heaven's sakes, our sitting governor, our incumbent governor, who is going to be reelected, I don't like saying it, but he will be, he's a Democrat.
Mm.
Or so he says.
Yeah,
bear in mind that this guy thinks he knows better how to run a woman's body than a woman does. Bear in mind that if he could, and felt like he could get away with it, he'd roll back tons of worker rights and gains in the area of labor rights if he could get away with it. So, Democrat, please.
Please, yeah. Then we have lots of constitutional amendments. We have this wonderful Florida Marriage Protection Amendment.
Oh, there it is, yeah.
They never give up, I tell you. But, I definitely recommend taking a long look at your ballot before you vote because it's a head spinner. But, my trip to America was quite interesting. Talk about reverse culture shock.
Oh, it must have been.
Mm-mm. Yeah. It's been about 6 years since my mother had seen my kids, so, it was nice. They're down in Tampa, you know, Land of Lakes area. That area.
Yeah. Gorgeous country.
Yeah, very nice. I was really quite surprised by two things. One was how big Americans have become.
And not in a good way.
Not in a good way, yeah. I think it's really the corn syrup. I mean, you have to realize I'm coming from the land of skinny people, and last December, we went to this shopping mall, which is actually quite new to Japan. We just got them recently, and it's a huge little thing, just it's a Japanese mall, shopping mall, and it's 20 minutes from end to end, three floors. I decided to keep my eye out just to look for large people, fat people, and couldn't find any in the 3-4 hours I walked around that mall, not a single one. And then I go to Disney, and it's just like it's almost wall-to-wall. It's like 40-50% perhaps. And that's not just an American thing. Because when I went to Disney, it was lots of British people, a lot of Germans. It's a worldwide problem. So I was really quite surprised by that.
I think you're right about the high-fructose corn syrup, because there has been an explosion in obesity in this country that goes hand in hand with the arrival of that noxious stuff into our food stream.
Because it's a huge poison. I got this metabolism where I never gain weight no matter what I eat. I used to have one of those.
I don't know what happened to it.
I don't know. I mean, I can still eat Haagen-Dazs all day and not gain a damn ounce. But
oh, yeah, there you go. Rub it in, Robert. Rub it in.
When I got there, boy, I think I gained maybe half a kilo or something. That really surprised me. My second son did gain some weight, and he was actually made fun of a little bit at school. There seems to be this subculture of you will take care of yourself here, and you will stay healthy and you will stay trim, and that's that. And it's so ingrained that, as I said, you don't see any obese or fat people except the ones in sumo. So
and they have to work to get that way.
They have to work that way. Yeah, well, even Takano Hana, I mean, Yokozuna's, the grand champions that a few years ago, he was on TV, and one of my part-timers was telling me, and he said he's lost all that weight. He's back to normal again. It's really quite surprising. But everyone had tattoos. That was surprising me.
You have been away a while, haven't you?
I'm telling you. Man, not normal, the mothers with, the little babies, and they had tattoos all over themselves, and again, coming from the land of people without tattoos except for the mobsters, Yakuza.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you wouldn't be able to get a job here if you had a tattoo, so the lesson you went with them. So that was kind of surprising, but Disney, what surprised me about Disney? Disney now has 9 parks, as you know.
Right. You went to Disney?
Well, I mean, I didn't go to the Magic Kingdom, because my boys are, 10 and 12, and so the Magic Kingdom wasn't a thing. But, they kind of want that amusement park thing, so I thought, okay, well, amusement park. We'll do it for a few days. My other plan was then to go up to Tallahassee, Florida where I have some property and a buddy of mine. And he still has my canoe, and we're going to go canoeing in the Wakulla River and the Ocklawakne River and the, you know, Gulf of Mexico, maybe St. Marks. That went down the tubes when Hurricane Fay, the first hurricane back then, came straight to Orlando. I actually looked at it from one of the top slides of the water park that I was at. Went straight to Jacksonville, made a left turn, and then went to Tallahassee for 3 days, and so floated out the entire area. So that went down the tubes, unfortunately. But yeah, I went to Animal Park, that Disney runs, Animal World Park, which, you know, kind of a nice thing, I suppose. And then to Sea World, which is not Disney, but close to it. I had to get fingerprinted to get into Sea World. Can you believe that?
What, you're gonna steal a whale?
Blew me away. You get the line behind you, so you want to sit there and raise hell about this, you know. And, you had to get fingerprinted.
I mean, did they say why, or was it national security citizen?
I guess so. I mean, make sure that, you know, the terrorist, Osama, didn't get in to bomb SeaWorld. What the hell? Because you're doing a bag check.
Because Osama hates Shamu.
That's right. Blew me away. I couldn't believe it. And so, yeah, that was another shocker. I had to get fingerprinted too to go to Busch Gardens, which is down in Tampa. But that was a little bit more logical. So they explained that you had a 2-day, your pass was good for 2 days, but only you could use it. And so they used the fingerprint to match up with your card.
Well, that, and there might be a little beer involved too. I mean, you know,
free beer. Yeah,
right. Yeah, but God, you've just given me this mental image, Robert, of George, you know, dim leader behind the podium. We've got to win the war on terror. Because
it begins with our amusement parks.
Because the terrorists hate us for our amusement parks.
Exactly. I mean, it's almost getting to the part of, you know, the Minority Report where it can be fingerprinted everywhere. I mean, good.
Yeah, pre-crime. Sure, pre-crime. And then,
I had to do this crap too when I returned back to Japan. I mean, even though I'm a permanent resident of Japan, even the permanent residents have to be fingerprinted. And so I was so pissed off. I was going to, you know, Band-Aid my fingers on the way back. And so, I had a skateboarding accident just to see what they did. I forgot to bring the Band-Aid. So actually, one foreign.
But the Japanese would not find the humor in that, would they?
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. Actually, one foreigner did, and he was surrounded by police, and there was long discussions about that. But they got my fingerprints. I mean, that was 15 years ago.
Sure.
So, what's the point, you know? But, Blizzard, I mean, the one thing I found about Disney World was that it blew me away. Most of the visitors were international. No doubt about it, okay? That was nice. A few Americans. All the workers were not Americans, almost, except the ones running the show. I mean, the managers, which were all white. Almost every single worker was foreign. I mean, you see the name, and then you see the country.
Mostly Latino, or broad spectrum?
They I don't know what they did. I mean, maybe they went through every single university and grabbed every single foreign worker, a foreign student. Because when I went to Blizzard Beach, which was a water park, Chinese were beautiful. I found a beautiful. We're not talking, you know, run-of-the-mill foreigners. We're talking beautiful, handsome. You know, if you're a woman.
Well, you've got to remember that they're referred to not as workers or teammates or. No, they are cast members because it's all a big theater set piece.
Oh, yeah. And they're all. Yeah. I mean, Miss China was up there running the rafts for me, you know. I was like, geez, I wish I was, you know, single and 20 years younger. But, it blew me away. I go down to the canteen in Blizzard Beach. It was Russians and Ukrainians. If you wanted, you know, no sense of going to the homepage and do your Disney date and Disney wife. And I realized one thing. It was the land of perfect people. You never saw any disabled people. And for the most part, yeah, I mean, the blacks and the Latinos were doing the cleaning.
Well, it's a small world after all, isn't it?
It's a very, very small world after all.
And preferably a white one.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, again, as I was saying, kind of reverse culture shock. But
it's kind of like Lake Wobegon. You know, there are no persons of color in Lake Wobegon.
Of course, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm no different. I'm in Atlanta. Very, you know, there's only one color here. So, yeah, that was kind of surprising. Then instead of going up to Tallahassee, you know, I saw my mother in Tampa. And that was kind of nice. It hadn't changed so much as I had thought. But instead of going up to Tallahassee, we went over to my wife's sister's place, which is over in Jupiter. And, you know, Tiger Woods has his home up, I think, in Jupiter Island. So it's a very, very rich place. I mean, I went to one shopping mall with three Starbucks in it.
Three?
Three. It blew me away at one shopping mall. Three.
Because we can't make it from one end of the mall to the other end of the mall without stopping twice for a grande mochaccino with soy milk foam?
You may end up in that side of the shopping mall, and you can't walk to the other side because you're too fat. So, yeah. So. Cologne costs $70.
You know, I think I bought my last bottle of cologne about 8 years ago and use it judiciously.
I think we're very similar. I mean, we got too much Scottish blood in me. I mean, you know, I use cologne if it's given to me, and that's about it. But, yeah, it was kind of funny because my wife's sister is a nurse, and her husband's a nurse. They used to have a place down in Port St. Lucie, which was quite nice a few years ago, but the way capitalism goes, it, you know, these cities rise and they fall very quickly. And so she says, yeah, Port St. Lucie's not so popular now, too many drugs and small crime dealers and blah, blah, blah. Now, Jupiter's the one that's really, you know, in fashion. But it's really expensive. I mean, even her townhouse, which was okay, $275,000. And it's like, gee whiz. Indeed.
I'm sorry. I've still got that old the hillbilly mindset. For $275,000, I want gold-plated shingles.
No kidding, you know. I mean, this doesn't reflect reality, all these home prices and in terms of wages. I mean, even here in Japan, I bought this nice home, used, of course, up on the mountain, conservation area, get a beautiful view of the city, and that only cost me $70,000. And I sold my crappy house, as I told you, in Franklin County, which was actually worth $20,000 for that much money, so I just paid cash for it. I'm probably one of the few people that actually, you know, benefited from this housing boom, but blew me away because I was thinking, these Americans are foolish to buy these homes for this much money because they're not worth it.
And that's the question. I guess it was probably, three, 4 years ago. I was playing golf with a buddy of mine up in Morgantown here in West Virginia, and it was and the golf course had been there since before I was a student, and way back then it was just this sort of little golf course down by the Cheat River that wasn't near anything. And this humongous community of McMansions had blown up around it, and my buddy is in the home building business. And I just looked at him and I said, look at the, because I mean, it's not like they were, you know, three bedroom, one bath, ranch style tract homes. Okay. It's nothing like what I grew up in. I mean, these huge, monstrous homes. And I looked at him and I said, how much do these go for? He said, well, you know, here in West Virginia, probably a house that size, $350,000, $400,000. I said, wow. And what is it elsewhere? He said, $750,000 to $1 million. And I said, and I looked at him and said, how in God's name does anybody make enough money to make the monthly nut on it?
Right.
And he looked at me
for
and said,
for 30 damn years.
Yeah, for 30 years. He looked at me and said, "That they don't think about that. That's not how this works now.
Mm-hmm.
You buy it, you pay on the interest, and you turn it around in 5 years, and you sell it for twice what you bought it for. And that's how these things. And so what I was I didn't realize it at the time, Robert, but I was having the housing bubble explained to me.
Right. Well, I mean, Japan did that, and back in the late 80s, and that blew up in their face in the 90s, and they went through 10, 15 years of recession because of that.
I mean, isn't this a classic case of living beyond our means?
Oh, exactly. I mean, that goes back to the fable of the grasshoppers, you know? I mean, it's even Japan, I mean, it's a generation thing, too. I mean, I look at this old home. I had to do some cleaning, you know, getting rid of some the mold on the outside of the tiles and on the foundation base because it's way up on the foundation. But the younger people, Japanese, couldn't be bothered to do that, to do a little bit of cleaning. They want everything new and they want it fresh. And so, as I told you, I think 10% of the housing stock in Japan is empty. In the next 5 years, it'll be 20% because the younger generation do not want anything used, no matter how nice it is.
So let me just ask, because I'm curious, Robert. Here in the West, of course, and you know, you were in the West at one time before you went over, and I'm sure you experienced a degree of culture shock. But when we think of housing in Japan here, we think of the beautiful sliding doors and the, I mean, is that really what it's is that still the traditional housing styles? Is that still what obtains? But when you talk about these young people that don't want anything old, are they buying typical American style McMansions?
Somewhat, I would say 80% American style. Maybe for the tile roof, you still have the Japanese tile roof. And that's about the extent of it. My buddy, one of my part-timers, just bought a new house over in Moji Ward, which is right close to the Camelon Straits. And he had his house imported from Sweden. I think it was Sweden. Yeah, Sweden. So, you know, and the Japanese building company did it for him. But I was really kind of surprised, you know.
He bought his house at IKEA, in other words.
Yeah, and they shipped it over, yeah. So, a lot of the new homes are not so Japanese style.
That's a shame.
Yeah, I mean, and they're very, very expensive, too. You're talking, again, $250,000 minimum, maybe $300,000. And they really are rather flimsy, as far as I'm concerned.
You realize you're really stoking the flames of Bob the expatriate in me, don't you, Robert?
I mean, because there's a lot of the old homes that are very Japanese style, that are very beautiful, and just need a little fixing up, maybe a paint job here, you know, scrub there.
Well, they were probably pretty well built in the first place.
Yeah, some of them.
The ones that didn't get firebombed in the recent unpleasantness.
Yeah. Yeah, Kitakyushu was quite fortunate because we were targeted and it was cloudy and the bombers said, oh, the hell with it, and went over to Nagasaki and bombed the Christian community there.
oh my God.
Having that Scottish blood, I can't have any mortgage debt crap over me. And so I was surprised that people in Japanese, they take on these huge loans, and then they think the good times will last for 30 more years, and it's going to be lolly dolly. And this gets into the real grasshopper
mentality. Can't do that. Can't do it.
No. Much less not have a dang thing in the refrigerator or the storage pantry.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, this home where we live is family property. It's been in the family for generations, and. We could do a lot of work on it, and someday maybe we will. And you know, I have wild fantasies I could probably call a 900 number over about, you know, two or three bathrooms in the house and a bigger kitchen and all that. But you know what? Mm-hmm. As long as we maintain the taxes on it, it's ours. And that is that old. Yeah, I guess you're right, Robert. That's that old Scots mentality. So you know.
I got my taxes stored away in my safe. I bought a safe a couple months ago, and I'm going to start stocking up money on it, and I got enough money to pay the taxes for the next 10 years. And my taxes are real cheap. I mean, if you buy a used home, and even if you remodel it, I mean, you knock everything down from the foundation up and you still build a new home, the taxes still stay the same. So $400 a year, not too bad. So.
No, in light of the fact that we got whacked $750 this year for this, for this little, you know, worn out, run down, But then, you know, me, there are people in other states who go, what? That's all you pay?
Yeah.
Because it costs money to have government services, and a lot of people, you know, and that's one of those, that's one of the functions of voter ignorance as propagated by the Repig-Lickin' Party is, oh, we've cut your taxes. Hey, stupid. Go look at your property tax bill. Went up when they cut your taxes, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he cut our taxes for Jesus. So.
Yeah, speaking about Jesus, I saw that Crookston Liar Fundy woman. God almighty. Oh.
Just make
you. That's one thing I'm blessed. Oh, it blew my mind. That's one thing I don't have to tolerate up here really too much is these idiots.
Yeah,
nice
you know.
Little agnostic atheist country.
Oh, well, see, we had Bridge Day this past Saturday, and it's a big to-do. It's the largest single-day festival in West Virginia, yada, yada, yada. And they put 200, 250,000 people out on the New River Gorge Bridge to watch people jump off of it. Now, why you'd want to jump off of a perfectly good bridge, I'll never figure out, but it's 876 feet to the bottom.
Wow.
And, of course, the FBI law enforcement people were there. Those are the FBI guys that walk around all in black.
Right.
They're like FBI ninjas or something. I don't know. You know, guy and the National Guardsmen, what few we have that aren't in Iraq, they were out there doing crowd control and stuff like that. And as I walked back to the – oh, I put in a good 10, 12 miles walking on Saturday because I was being all mountaintop removal missionary and everything because you can see the mountain here in my home perfectly. You can see the mountain that they're blowing up, and it's actually the mountain on the state quarter. So I was, you know, stopping by.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Hey, buddy, you look beautiful, isn't it? Yeah. Get an eyeful because it ain't going to be there next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was doing all of that. But then on the way back, lo and behold, you know, we're walking back to the vehicle. And here's this fundamentalist idiot talking about how God loves us all. And that if we don't love him back real good, he's going to burn us forever. At the top of his lungs.
Wow.
Screaming his fool head off. And I bit my tongue and I chewed on my lip. Because I just wanted to go up and get in his face and scream some back. But I figured, you know, they'll haul. No, because they'd haul me away. Not the idiot disturbing the peace, but the guy getting disturbed.
Right.
So I just walked by and said, yeah. There'll be pie in the sky when we die. Shut up. And but of course he didn't. And he was handing out these little tracts that he had hand inked to make Jesus extra bloody. Oh, Robert, the challenges. It is an everyday challenge. But I can't. Well, but I can't just shut up and be silent anymore. Like screaming at those phony plumbers in Roanoke the other day. I had to. I wouldn't have been able to live with myself if I'd just driven by that. Or the pasty-faced, doughy white guys hollering about abortion. And you got to ask those people, who would Jesus bomb?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there seems to be so much mismanagement on the part of God. I mean, there's that Chinese earthquake, 60,000 people dead from that. Now, I said, well, maybe, you know, I said to a Norwegian guy that's a Christian, I said, well, maybe God killed those people because, or let them die because they're not Christians. He, his little head nodded up, and I said, well, if that's the case, then maybe he doesn't like those Funties in Iowa, which had that 1-in-500-year flood and killed a lot of those people, and then the Funties in Texas, Galveston.
Well, you got to wonder about God's competence if he's doing all of this stuff because, you know, there it is. He completely wipes out Galveston Island, and the only thing he leaves standing is the gay bar.
I told him that. I said, isn't that funny? Because I listened to that on, I think it was on your show, right?
Yeah.
And it was. I just roared with laughter. I said, what do you think about that? Is that a nice little message? And see, either God, that's a message, A, or B, God doesn't really care and doesn't control the weather, or, you know, or three, that God's hands are tied and can't interfere, blah, blah, blah.
Or four, there ain't one.
No, ain't one, right. So.
Yeah, I mean, look at him. There he was. He drew a bead on New Orleans for all them drag queens.
Mm-hmm.
And instead winds up killing a bunch of poor folks and left the drag queens intact.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, if.
Maybe God's gay.
If there was a manager and there was this much incompetence, there would be, you know, criminal charges up against this manager for, you know. You know,
look at him. He knocked up Mary without having sex with her. I mean, maybe God's gay.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, it gives pause for thought. I mean, that's why I think it's a little bit easier to become a little bit more rational and step back and focus on what you can know instead of what you think you might know, or try to match your opinions up instead of trying to match your opinion or belief. You know, belief is nothing but an opinion, and to match your opinion up with that this abstract entity's opinion of himself, and you know.
Oh, I'll never forget that list that John Fox and Peter Godbold and I had such fun with a year or so ago. The signs that your God may be imaginary. And one of them was, if your God hates all the same things you do, he might be made up. And really, isn't that at the heart of, isn't that at the heart of this? Because it, without fail, it's always the same thing that these people hate that God turns out to be against.
And but the thing is, these hateful little people have an agenda, and they are out to fulfill, you know, prophecy. And that's why Palin just makes me shiver. God, I mean, because you think about it, I mean, in Gulliver's Travels, you know, there was the idea of the Yahoos. And the whole premise of the Yahoo is that when they replace the leader, they always found a worse and stupider Yahoo to replace him. And then they got rid of that Yahoo and replaced him with something stupider. Who's stupider than George Bush? McCain.
Who's stupider than McCain?
Stupider McCain.
Palin.
And then we get past Palin.
Well, Dean, you know, Dean Swift.
From Idiocracy.
Yeah, Dean Swift wasn't exactly, I mean, he was Swift.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, you know, and again, for the non-reality-based crowd, it's not that he had the power of prophecy. It's that he had the power of deep and profound appreciation and understanding of human nature. And again, that brings us full circle to the quality of fables, Robert.
Right.
Because, as we all know, the fox and the grapes. It's not about foxes and grapes. It's about jealousy. Grasshoppers and ants. It ain't about grasshoppers and ants. It's about living beyond one's means and not attending to one's future. And you know, Yeshua the brown-skinned day laborer knew this. And that's why he talked about prodigal sons and parables and a man that casteth his seed upon the stone and some fell in the soil, because he knew he too was dealing with morons. But it turns out that he didn't anticipate the stupidity of the future people, because they think he's actually talking about prodigal sons and seeds falling in ground.
It's quite surprising.
No one will ever go broke underestimating the intelligence of the human race.
Never will. Keep storing up those beans and rice, Bob. Can't have you starve anytime.
No. I got a few hunks of hog jowl in the freezer just for flavoring.
Good.
Yeah. Oh, I love that stuff, because you can trim the skin off the back of it and you cook a pot of beans with that skin in it. You don't eat the skin. You just flavor with it. And Of course, I'm not supposed to do that anymore, so don't tell anybody.
Okay.
Well,
I will try to send you I sent out two new editions for my Aesop fables, and
I
made them for children. So,
well, my kids, my wife, and I, we've got them sitting in the living room, and we just thumb through them all the time.
Okay.
Because there's so much wisdom and so much instruction there, and it's a great opportunity for me to look at my kids, Robert, and say, again, read this for its meaning, not for its obvious topic.
Right.
Huh? And in a little teaching moment, and really cool things happen.
Well, I still read some of mine to my own children, because I really think that it's high time we started having some personal wisdom with our younger generation instead of just nonsense and stupidity. So I did put out a new book called New Christian Fables, which took me about 3 years to write. That's on Lulu, too. Going through some of the Bible and actually coming up with real spirituality instead of the crap that you get in the churches. So,
well, you know, it may sound crazy, but my favorite translation, and I know you probably need to get to class and stuff, but My favorite translation of the Bible is something that came out in the late 60s and has been republished a jillion times. It's called the Jerusalem Bible. And it was translated by real, live, honest-to-goodness experts in the languages. For instance, Job was translated by J.R.R. Tolkien. Now, there's no hobbits in this version of Job or anything, but it's just sane. And I've been reading along because I'm so critical of it. I